I call this regular meeting of the Board of Trustees. The date is February 19th, 2013, and the time is 6:05. Tony, if you could please call roll.
Mr. Cardona?
Here.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Here.
Mr. Medina?
Here.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Here.
Mrs. Quintana?
Here.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Present.
Mrs. Sterrell?
Here.
And that will take us to the next agenda. Isn't that? Can we have these two kids come and help us lead to the pledge? The ones in the front row?
Yours.
Come on. We're just going to wait for Annette real quick.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Under the Texas flag, I pledge allegiance to thee, Texas, one state, undivided, one and indivisible.
Thank you. Okay, now we'll take us to the next item, which is the CISD mission statement. Ms. Searles, if you could please read the mission statement, I would appreciate it.
Why, thank you. I'd be happy to. The Kanyutia ISD will provide a quality education to assure that all students graduate on time, are prepared for higher education, or are workforce ready.
Thank you. Now we'll take us to the next agenda item.
Item 2 is Board Honors. This is this one.
Good evening, Board President Rodriguez, board members, Mrs. Griffin, and members of the audience. How do you spell excellence? How about determination? Here's how. CANUTILLOISD. We are so proud to have with us the winners of this year's Campus Spelling Bees. These students have succeeded in what is a national tradition and a cultural obsession. El Paso is a force to be reckoned with when it comes to spelling bees. Did you know that 4 national spelling bee champions have come from the El Paso region? Maybe the next one will too, and he or she is sitting in this room. These 6 students will have a chance to qualify for the National Spelling Bee in Washington, D.C. by competing in the Regional Spelling Bee later this month. Please help me welcome the students who will represent KANUTIA ISD. As I call your name, please come to the front. Olivia Mata, third grader. Alberto Castillo, fourth grader from Kenyatillo Elementary School. David Hernandez, fourth grader from Deanna Davenport Elementary School. Garrison Wetton, fifth grader from Gonzalo and Sofia Garcia Elementary School. Edgar Garcia, third grader from Jose Damian Elementary School. Yeah. And Carlos Peru, seventh grader from Aldenete Middle School. Yeah. These students represent the great work that is being done in our schools. We wish them well and hope they bring home a regional championship. Yeah.
can come up for a group picture with
them. The parents as well.
And her parents as well. If you'd like to come up and take a picture.
Thank you all to all the students, and hopefully you all come back and be victorious. Thank you for what you're doing for our district. So, good luck.
Yeah.
Now we'll take us to the next agenda.
Item 3A, consider approval of request for use of school facilities from Oasis Community Church for Garcia Elementary School beginning March 3rd, 2013. Mr. Rodriguez.
So we have page 's on a memo on the publications. Does anybody have any questions? Or?
I'd like just a little time to read it.
Okay. Is there any on the audience? Or?
Is there a representative from the church, the Oasis Community Church?
Yes, Mr. DiMatteo is here.
Good evening. My name is Alex DiMatteo. I'm the pastor of Oasis Community Church.
Could you tell us what you'd like of the board, what you'd like of the district, please, Pastor?
Yes, ma'am, I certainly can. First of all, I thank you guys for your time and listening to me talk today. What we'd like is we are hoping that Oasis Community Church can meet at Garcia Elementary School on Sunday mornings, right off the bat, starting March 3rd. And also, it'd be a great blessing if we could meet there free of charge. That'd be just wonderful for us. We are a startup church, which means we don't have a lot of money. So that's why we submitted the waiver fee form.
Are you asking for a waiver for the first couple of months, or are you asking for, because it says over a two-year period, what is your expectation?
Well, the reason we put that is because we don't know how long that will be at Garcia Elementary. I mean, 2 years is a good start, but if we either grow more than that school can hold, then we'll obviously go somewhere else, but we don't really know how long.
I don't see a problem with the issuance of the amount of time you all need to use. It's just on the waiver, and so I don't know if the board is okay with it, and if that's fine, I'm okay with it. The other issue is maybe we could do it after, you know, a couple of months, or quarterly or something. Mr. Quinn.
Mr. Chair. And ordinarily, I wouldn't have a problem, an issue with this, but during the summers, it's kind of puts a little different turn on things when we have our campuses sometimes try to close them for energy management and conservation. And so not only that, to have our staff or some of our staff have to be available on Sundays during the summer when, you know, I don't know that, I mean, if it's during the year, I would have no problem with it. But during the summer kind of places a different commitment from our staff. If it's during the year and it doesn't conflict with our other events, I would say, okay, we've let others, you know, I don't know about waiving the entire fee since it's going to be for an extended period, but during the summer, I don't know, I think we have to let our staff or our administration take a look into that, because there's going to be some, apart from a lot of construction going on, probably not at Garcia though, but we may have our staff diverted into other areas of the district because of our ongoing bond construction and renovation of the entire facilities that might take our staff away from there that we may not be able to attend, basically have them come in on Sundays.
Now, if by staff you mean the custodians, I completely understand. And I mean, I was raised with the philosophy, you leave a place better than when you found it. And as a church, what we're gonna do is obviously clean up after ourselves so that if a custodian ever did come in behind us, he'd just look around and be able to leave in 2 minutes, if that makes sense.
Well, it's not just the custodian, it's security, who's gonna open up the facility, who's gonna close the facility, who's gonna check the facility, make sure everything's.
What?
I don't know. I think we need to have administration
a little bit closer look is what you're saying.
And if it's workable, we've opened it up to other organizations, religious organizations, and other organizations. But this is a little more extensive, a little more a commitment during periods where ordinarily the school is shut down.
What if we were to have somebody just approve the waiver, and then I guess on a quarterly basis administration looks at the cost, and if it is eating, especially in the summertime, then they could address that issue. But what do you all say?
Chair, I have a question.
Go ahead.
Ms. Brigham, what's the cost per use?
Normally, we do have a fee schedule, however, normally, I think for this, when we did ask for a waiver, that we would waive the fee. The only thing what we were looking at is the custodial for somebody to come in to open up. Mm-hmm. That's the whole issue. I mean, I do agree, you know, my schools have been used for churches, and the only thing that we have to do is you still have to open the school. You're going to have to get somebody to open the school. And then come back and close the school. Mm-hmm. And that's probably, because I know at AMS we did that. I don't think we did it every Sunday. I'd have to check. But Mr. Rodriguez said we could look at it divide it up into like 3 months, 4 months, and take a look and see what the cost associated with it is. The other thing is,
why the administration didn't sign off on this right away is it was a two-year. Because I can't, as a building principal, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know, I can't, I did not feel comfortable signing something that would commit the district for 2 years. We do have some commitments for like a season, mm-hmm. and we have some for 6 months, but not for 2 years, so. Mm-hmm. But I think what Mr. Rodriguez brought forward is doable.
How about, and then it could come back to the board next year. So we go on a one and then do the quarterly on, or go ahead, Mr.
Mr. Chair, I don't mind that we do maybe like right now for a 2 or 3 month period. I don't know that I could vote to commit us to the summer until we get a report from the administration. I'm sorry, because we usually shut down campuses, sometimes full scale. Actually, I don't know, Garcia, are we planning to do the energy shutdowns that we did last time?
What we're going to be doing with Garcia, remember we have some bond projects that will be coming up, so Garcia will be used as a summer school, so there will be probably 600 to 700 kids at Garcia in the summer. So it might be the opposite happen, that we're going to have it over.
Okay. I have a suggestion.
Sure.
What if we looked at granting this on a temporary basis through maybe the end of May and see where we're at there? Get a report from administration to find out the cost, and maybe we could ask you if your church would be willing to at least pay for the person that comes in and opens and comes back and closes for their time.
I do have a question, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
And I don't mean this in any other way than we are trustees. We must be good stewards of what we've been entrusted. And I read that you want the classrooms. I have a problem with that because of all the things that are in the classrooms. And I now see that you say you will take, you know that that's an issue too, and that you would take full responsibility. But I don't see any proof of what that responsibility is. Are you, you know, do you have insurance, something that would, and I maybe send this over to our legal, you know, something that would cause us, maybe it's our insurance, I don't know what it is, but, you know, accidents happen, children are children. We have a lot at stake. You know, the cafeteria is one whole thing. It's like having this room. You know, what's going to go wrong? Not much. But classrooms are a whole different story. That's the only thing I have a problem with.
Yes.
And we have never had a precedent of having people in our classrooms, ever. Am I correct that I can think of?
Well, we did AMS once.
Okay. And how did it, could you maybe the report?
Well, it was a church function, and the cafeteria was fine and the gym was fine. And so,
yeah.
But the classrooms got a little bit more problematic because of the technology equipment.
Yeah.
And the things like that.
And the personal possessions that are in classrooms. Maybe it's possible, because I really don't feel I can recommend use of the classrooms. I say, sure, you know, the cafeteria, absolutely. You know, what a wonderful blessing it would be. The classrooms, I can't say yes to them. What I'm thinking is, I understand your need for divided space. Maybe you could purchase, rent, I'm not sure what they're called, but I know every office has them. They're like these blue, they're about the color of those chairs, blue little cubicle pieces, and that you could, you know, almost like an accordion, fold them up, take them home, or, you know, and I would say take them home, because I wouldn't think that we could be responsible for storing your stuff either. That's my concern, Mr. Chair, is the classroom is not...
Was that it?
Yeah.
Ms. Gonzalez?
Sisters, let me call recently that at the high school there was a church at classrooms were being used.
They were? Yes. And everything went fine?
To my knowledge, yes.
Yeah. And actually, it was a lengthier lease on that one. Mm-hmm. It was a year.
And they had the classrooms, mm-hmm. too.
I think what we can do is, I know you want a more of a committed time. You don't want to come back 3 months. But maybe what I would recommend is at least commit a good amount of time, but at least revisit the payment structure. That way they know that they have a place, and then we could revisit the payment structure quarterly and address that way. At least to start off, and then quarterly we'll come back, and then we could address it then. And if it's, of course, we have to be good stewards. Was that it, Ms. Gonzalez? Ms. Quintana?
I have a suggestion maybe for the classroom also. If the principal wouldn't mind asking teachers who would be willing to volunteer their classrooms, knowing mm-hmm. that you know.
That's an excellent.
Yeah.
Because that would be on a voluntary basis, and they would know that sometimes things do happen.
And be willing to take the risk.
And be willing to take the risk.
Yeah.
So if is it okay if we could go with a year and then quarterly revisit the payment structure?
Yes, sir. That'd be fine.
Yeah. Is that okay with the board? Can I get a motion then?
So moved.
Okay. So okay. I have a motion that we approve the request for use of school facilities from Oasis Community Church for Garcia Elementary School beginning March 3rd, 2013 for a year, and revisit the quarterly payment structure. And do you want the board to revisit it quarterly, or do you want administration to?
I think the board should.
The board? Okay. Mr. Cornell?
Is that the motion?
That's the motion on the floor in the second.
The only issue I see is that I don't see a problem waiving some of the actual fee, but for the person that has to go in there on Sundays, I don't, because that's extra money that's coming out of the budget. That's not even budgeted for. I don't see how we could, in good conscience, waive that. I mean, I can see waiving the fee for the facility itself, what we usually charge, but to have to pay somebody out of our pocket when it's not in the budget, and this would be extra hours if this person's coming in, I don't think we should do that at this time.
Okay.
What time does church start?
The church would start, it would start at 10 services, but obviously
you got to get there and set up.
You got to get there before. But to be honest with you, I mean, if the fees were waived to use the building, that would save us so much money. And I don't see a problem paying for security, because how much money you save.
Okay.
So do we want to do that quarterly as well, or do we just do the 4 year?
I would suggest just quarterly.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, is that okay?
In
fact, no, we did, fine. We did, the last one we did was with Harvest, I believe, Christian Church. I don't think they were for a full year, but they were part of the majority of the year. And I think they paid. their fee was that way.
Okay. Okay, so.
Maybe we ought to revisit to see what the terms of that agreement were. But here, when it's going to be during the summer period, that's an extra amount in our budget. I don't think we should, not even that divides it, I don't think we should agree to.
On the first quarter, what we're going to do is have the payment for the actual individual that's going to come in, and then each quarterly we'll revisit it and see what is it, but at least we have a year.
And correct me if I'm wrong, Annette, there's also fees related to the utilities. And then also the actual facility fee, right?
Right. And what I believe what they're asking for is for us to waive the utility fee and the fee for the school, because I think the fee for the school is like Mr. Mm-hmm. Dean was saying, mm-hmm. I think it's for the building. You know, it depends on what part of the building they rent, that we have a fee structure. What I need is clarification on is I have no problem doing whatever the board's pleasure is, but what I'm looking at is if we do it for past, like three, I'm still going to have to pay somebody to come in right now. So I can, we can do that and then charge the church, but I can put it up, I'll have to get the finance and see how to set that up as far as how to pay that person to come in and then come back. But as far as what the motion is, if we give them from March 3rd, 2013 for 1 year and then revisit it quarterly as far as the fees for the person coming in, is that correct?
The quarterly, we'll visit the fees quarterly. So in other words, if there's the cost associated, administration would bring back and say, okay, this cost is associated with opening the building, you know, and then hopefully you all are on better grounds and then we could.
Well, I provide a very clear figure for what it would cost for the person to come in. I mean, I could give that to
but
the church.
You're willing to pay that, right?
Yeah, security, yes, sir.
Yeah.
And utilities as well. Just an overall valuation of what it's going to be.
I have no problem waiving the facility fee. It's those extra costs that are coming out of our pocket that we wouldn't have otherwise that I have a concern for because of our budget. And so I'm okay with doing it, but as long as that extra person that we have to pay to come in and the utilities that whatever fee structure that is, I'm fine with waiving the other fee, but not the utility, which is extra cost, and the cost of having to pay somebody to go in and open it or watch it or whatever. Because those are costs that that actually is an increase to the district and the taxpayers, and that part I don't think is fair to the taxpayers. But the other part of waiving the fee for the facility, I'm fine with that.
I'll amend my motion to reflect Mr. Coronado's stipulations that the church will pay for the additional for the person opening up the facility, and then administration will notify the church as to the cost for utilities. Is that agreeable?
Yes, ma'am.
That's my motion.
And I'll amend my second.
Okay. So then if I don't hear any other discussion or any other questions, Tony, can you please pull the board?
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Menino?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Charles?
Yes.
Congratulations.
Congratulations.
I appreciate your time.
That will take us to the next item.
Item B is Finance Audit Facilities Planning Committee meeting report. Mr. Coronado?
All right. Mr. Chair, there's some good news and some bad news. The bad news first, I think we all pretty much know. The bad news is that we have a report from our administration with respect to our ongoing projects, and that was really the focus of the meeting. And the district-wide projects, not including the PK-8 and not including the district-wide HVAC and energy management is over to the tune of between $2 and $3 million. It depends on what other, you know, things we're adding and not adding and what we're, but the good news is, and that's district-wide for all the projects, I think everything came in, we're very close to on budget. There was a few projects that really made a jump, but for example, the high school projects came in on very close to on budget. CMS obviously came on budget and increased in another part of them, but because of their savings from the sewage treatment addition to connect to the sewer line, that those savings will probably end up paying for the increase. So the good news is that, where is Martha?
She's
She's out of Tazewell.
We'll check on that.
Huh? Martha Aguirre?
Aguirre.
She's out of Tazewell.
Out of Tazewell. Good news is that we anticipate that we're going to have a surplus of about $3 million from the INS in order to... What we did is we purchased basically tax savings to the district at the bond that we promised the community. But we were able to do that without having to actually pay the $3 million because of the increase in the taxes from our local output from property values. So we didn't have to actually pay for that reduction in taxes. We're able, I think, to accomplish getting the same payment through for INS that we were going to pay to reduce the tax effort because of the extra tax value. Is that correct, Mr. Gatlin? Which means, I think we're even going to, it's even going to go more than the $3 million, mm-hmm. but then we can tack that on and save tax rate when we set it next year. I think it's a suggestion that to the board that instead of actually paying a further an extra $3 million to even further reduce the tax rate, is that we actually put that $3 million back into the bond projects where we're going to be over between mm-hmm. $2 and $3 million. We're actually going to be over budget by more than that because that doesn't even take into account the district-wide HVAC where we're going to be at, we're already in a deficit. Our PK through 8 is already at about a few $1 million deficit. This would go a long way to help the rest of the district-wide projects. Maybe we can even save from that $3 million without having to put all of it into the district-wide projects and funnel some of that to the HVAC or to the PK through 8 project. And then after that, any other savings for next year with the tax rate that we actually go towards reducing the INS tax rate instead of purchasing more tax relief. We've done already what we promised the community we would do. So I think it's, you know, probably you know, a good suggestion that the board funnel those $3 million to the ongoing bond projects. It actually is a better outlook than what we told the community. So it relieves us of having to go out for another immediate bond or even increase our debt by picking out either maintenance tax notes or financing some of the HVAC, part of the HVAC project. There are some of the items that we discussed at the facility finance are on our agenda tonight, but the biggest of our discussion focused on the ongoing district-wide bond projects and the funds that are lacking and the funds that are that we're able to garner from the extra tax effort. So anybody has any questions?
Any questions? No. Thank you, Mr. Coronado, and the committee. That'll take us to the next agenda. I have some good news. So.
Very good news.
Item C, Policy, Instruction, Personnel, Student Services Committee meeting report. Mrs. Gonzalez.
Hey. We also had a Personnel, Policy, and Student Services Instruction Committee meeting on February the 11th. We discussed several agenda items, and one of them was the CW, local naming of facilities, and where we changed the wording, such as revisions include once a school is named and or a principal is assigned. Secondly, a principal shall be changed to district, shall establish a committee to recommend a school mascot and colors. The other one was B2B local planning and decision-making process, campus level, where it says that all meetings may be held outside the regular school day, and adding that campuses are expected to meet during the school day and after the school day to increase participation of business and community members before they would meet during the school day. They weren't supposed to meet during the school day. Human resources, the TEA recommended positions as a result of the TEA audit. One of them that was approved that day, that was recommended actually, was a CT counselor. And the other one, one of the other agenda items, the 2-hour absences were exempt employees and teams. Before it was approved, the system was not allowing employees to call in. And that's an agenda item that we're also addressing tonight. It will allow employees to call in their absences for 2-hour increments for exempt employees. The other one is creation of new position for district liaison lobbyist. And they're supposed to bring this job description. Discussion and possible formulation and recommendation to the Board of Trustees regarding the Director of Student Community Services job description. They were supposed to add the job responsibilities there, which were not included previously, and we're also approving that tonight. The other one is discussion and possible formulation and recommendation to the Board of Trustees regarding the review and possible revision of district stipends. The rate of pay will be based on the job assignment and can range from the minimum to the midpoint. They're also presenting that tonight to the full board. Transportation work calendar was also discussed, and 180-day work calendar employees will be increased to 185. That was a recommendation and to the board, and it will be possibly approved tonight. The employee appreciation event planning was also recommended to the full board. And as Grace Gardens here in Canapillo, the total price will be $20,336.25. The other one, and the last agenda item is the National Affiliate Money Saving Resources Grants. And Ms. Suñiga has funding for contracted services to hire a grant writer to ensure CISD meets grant deadlines. And that was approved, that was recommended, that was approved by the committee. Any
Madam Chair, I have a couple of questions.
Yes, sir.
One regarding the grant writing. My understanding of the job description in the past and the individual we had in the past was that they were also applying for grants and now we're doing contracted services. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yes, sir.
And so in the past, we had an individual that was actually applying for grants, and we saw the amount of grants that were being applied, and now are we applying for grants?
Ms. Lori brought in a list of, she attended a conference, and she was given a list of grants, and as per Ms. Suñiga, there was not enough time to apply for those grants, so she was doing some other things. So she said she had money set aside for contracted services. And
did the job description change, or?
No, although it states on her job description that she should be writing grants, the committee felt at that time that it was appropriate for her to pursue contracted services because there was a deadline in applying for those grants.
So to apply for those?
Those particular grants.
That
was the committee's recommendation to apply for those contracted services.
Yeah.
And who is actually doing the contracted services?
Is Ms. Suñiga here?
No, she's not. No. She's also a tech.
They said they had. I'm not sure if it was one individual or two that they had done business with in the past. Ms. Brigham.
To answer question number one, her title is external funding. I don't know if it's facility coordinator or whatever.
It's coordinator.
Coordinator, thank you, sir. And in her job duties, there's a lot more compliance, especially with Title I and Title II, Title III. So she handles the SAS, which is the standard application for the Title I. Title III, you know, they're still, even though they're considered that they're a non-competitive grant, they still have to apply, and those take quite a lot of planning and time. However, since we have had a lot of internal audits with those funding, a lot more time has been taken up that job in the past 2 years, and the increased accountability under Nickleby. And so that's why I think years ago, I know when the gentleman that used to be there that now is at EPISD, it was himself and somebody else in that department, and now it's gone to one person. So that's what the committee was, you know, she was saying to the committee, she does have contracted services that she could bring in people that she has worked with previously, or the district has worked with previously, to write some of the grants that Ms. Searles has brought in. And she felt that it could be done because she has the criteria, at least, you know, the reference that they have to use.
So Jose had two individuals, Jose Lopez?
With him, and then he had a person that worked with him. So actually, it was my...
He was part of the secretary.
Christine, she was...
I guess my question is, if we have an external funding coordinator that's dealing with Title I and that's a job description, then that has to be a job description. And if we have an individual that's dealing with grants, and we have to look at, and so I don't know if that needs to be revisited or looked at.
You're absolutely right, sir. It does have to be revisited, even with the TEA audit that came in. Remember, I had said that we might be looking at three jobs that can be morphed into two rather than the three jobs. Because TEA said they looked at like a federal grants program manager or something like that. So that's why we're going to be looking at those three jobs, because we have our compliance director, we have the external funds, and then we have the federal one. And so we're trying to see if we can take three jobs and make them into two jobs and realign the job duties to be more appropriate to what they are. The accountability definitely has increased under the external funding person.
That's it for right now, and I think we're going to have to revisit that later. But the other question I had... Does anybody else have any questions for Ms. Gonzalez?
No. Questions, just a comment. I think here in the very near future, I think especially in the area of the security, there's probably going to be a lot more federal funds available to do things for the districts, as well as maybe even from the state. We're taking a look at a district-wide issue with respect to our security. And I think it's really incumbent upon us to make sure that somebody is on top, not only looking for, but applying, you know, searching out. It's not just to say, hey, you need to apply for this grant. I think we need to actively seek out where these funds are available. Funds are getting harder and harder to come by in terms of external sources of funding. And you know, the legislature might increase our funding this year for the next biennium. They might not. I don't know. They might make some available in terms of grants available as well for certain issues, like security. I'm sure that's high on their list, as well as the federal government. I really think it's incumbent as that we might just revisit that and see that we actually have somebody actively seeking out and applying for these grants. I think it will save us in the long run quite a bit of money for the district. So,
was that it, Mr. Coronado?
I'd like to piggyback on what Mr. Coronado's saying, though, that if we get this person, we've got a guard that somebody doesn't go, oh, you know, they don't look very busy. We could use them over here. And, well, gee, they're not very busy, so let's use them over here, too. That we don't let that happen again, because it seems to happen every time. I mean, we've all been here a long time. We've had more than one grant writer, and they get funneled off like someone thinks their job isn't important. Their jobs are important, they're specific, and I think we need to, administratively as well as board-wise, remember that and keep their jobs on track to do what they were hired to do.
One thing that we might want to take a look at is in the past, to percentage-wise, how much grant you've had in the past, and maybe see if over the last 10 years, see how well we've done, and that'll tell us how, you know, focused we've been on that, or how much the time has been diverted away from this community.
Well, that was one of our concerns, and we put that as part of the overall goals when it came to the district. So I think it's something we need to look at and something that needs to be addressed. But if there's no other questions for Ms. Gonzalez, and thank you, Ms. Gonzalez, for the report.
Mr. Chair, one other thing I neglected to tell you in the report, that I did tell you that there were items on the agenda that we discussed. The last four items on the consent agenda were recommended by the committee. Service for Finance Committee for approval, and that's PQRNS. The other additional item that was, we were presented with a proposed bond sale within the next probably, I don't know, 4 to 6 months from our financial advisors. I think we probably ought to get our financial advisors to come again, not only to discuss the issue of the proposed sale a few months down the road, but also to discuss the issue right before we set our tax rate on the IMS issue with respect to the $3 million that we may be able to save from the IMS for this year to put into the bond funds. But I wouldn't want to do that, and you know, I think the board should the board should look at doing that. I would feel a lot more comfortable that we get some more definite and have Martha actually get our financial advisors on board and prepare a report to us about that particular issue sometime soon before we engage in the budget process.
I agree.
All right, Chair.
Okay.
Also in our committee, I believe we discussed security in RFP, and I don't see it on our consent agenda.
Yeah, that's right. The RFP for security is recommended to the board. We can get it on the next special agenda.
It wasn't. No, Steve, can
no,
we?
That was not,
it has to be approved, right? It wasn't in the budget.
Board approved that.
The RFP for security?
Yes.
It has to be a board agenda?
Yeah.
Was there a reason, or it just got? Okay. I'll take anything else?
No, that was it. The committee did recommend that we go out for consultant services with respect to our security, and that they obviously be itemized with respect to each of the facets of what it would cost to do such an estimate for services district-wide.
For securing our campuses, for
security,
our students?
Security assessment.
Various side facets side. Of the okay. security issues.
Yeah. Okay.
Technology.
Yeah, I think we need to get ahead of that before anybody else gets ahead of it, and we have to be on top of it. So I think it's a good idea, and so I guess the next agenda, the next item, if we could have an RFP, we need to approve that. And so, okay, that will take us to the next agenda item.
Item B is the Federal Relations Network Conference Report. Mrs. Searles.
I have so much to tell you, and I know you don't want to hear all of it, so don't let me drone on. Mr. Coronado, you were right on, though. Top of the list was the president's proposed initiatives related to school safety, which he is coming out with, and there will be funding. That's something that they made very clear that there is going to be funding for, and that it looks like he'll apply for bigger and better. So what happened was, it was the Federal Relations Network for the first session of the 113th Congress. The National School Board Association had different initiatives, different briefs, if you will, that they want school districts everywhere to support in every way they can. And all of them were good for kids, were good for schools, were good for communities. And they were essentially this: to restore the maximum flexibility to local school boards in the delivery of federal education programs. And to do that, the National School Board Association drafted a bill that essentially elaborates on that. The other thing they'd like is to reauthorize the Elementary and Secondary Education Act during the first session of Congress, incorporating the recommendations of the National School Board Association based on input from us. They would also, National School Board Association, like to see increased federal funding for Title I and IDEA and other education investments. But under sequestration, those are the very two that will be cut. And I'll tell you what, we are not going to hurt. Our school district is not going to hurt like others will. I'll tell you that in a moment. Also, to support effective school safety initiatives at the discretion of local school districts, including school resource officers, threat assessment, response training, and better coordination between local school districts, and this was a big thing, mental health providers, that the school safety issue that is coming to the forefront is not so much about just brick and mortar and you've got to secure your building, but you need to know who's on your campus. You need to know your children, your workers. You need to know the mental health aspect of it. And apparently there will be initiatives pushing mental health as well. That is a very big key thing in safety they brought home. Also, to support local school district flexibility, and I see our food service director, in the federal child nutrition law implementation in response to the costly and burdensome requirements in the Healthy Hunger-Free Kids Act. Also, to oppose federal legislation to create or expand private school vouchers, including tuition tax credits, that will undermine public education. And I brought back quite a few different pieces of paper to share. The biggest thing I think was, and I'd like to probably send this down to Miss Annette, assigning police officers to schools. And it's from the Department of Justice. Maybe Mr. Rodriguez would like if it stopped with him and he looks over it too. I'm sure he has barely anything to read.
Can't you tell? Look at this.
They're asking that nationally, what they're suggesting, not asking, but what they're suggesting be best practice would be to have SROs, 200 days of duty, trained by the Sheriff's Department after that 200 days, and then return to the schools. They want mental health needs to be assessed and dealt with. Safety to be updated, and we're doing such a good job, actually. They brought up the new schools, which we've already been discussing highly at our facilities committees. The doors need to be metal, they need to lock from the inside, and you need ingress egress. I felt really happy that we had all those areas hopefully covered. They brought home that we must protect our students to the best of our ability, calculated ahead of time, and in so doing, it reduces our liability. The Sandy Hook School District has been just inundated with hundreds of millions of dollars worth of lawsuits against them. As a school district, we can't guarantee safety, they told over and over again, but we have to do all that is known how to do to show that we've covered all our bases. Safety plans must be confidential, not on the internet, and involve everyone in the discussion. It's one of the most important local choices we're going to make. I could go on and on about that, but I think I gave us pretty much the highlights. We need to be on top of our game with school safety. The president's plan, the Obama administration initiatives are three things: putting up to 1,000 new school resource officers and school counselors in schools, improving screening and referral for behavioral health resources, and proposing to have $50 million to train social workers, counselors, psychologists, and other mental health professionals in schools. So that's what's going to be coming down from the Obama administration to the Congress, and we'll see how they chew it up and return it, but those are his initiatives. And I've got all these papers if anybody would like to see them. They're pretty, you know, to the point. They're not drawn on. Sequestration is 10 years, and essentially the Title I and IDEA cuts at this point would be for every $1 million of federal money that you get, they'll cut $59,000 from each district. So, you know, it's not as horrible as it could be. I know that's $59,000, but it's not like, you know, somebody took our arm off or something. We can get by with it. And it's over 10 years. School districts, overall, the education will be a 5.9% cut, which will be $3 billion over 10 years. But when you bring that locally, it's not the huge amounts that it sounds like. So thank you very much, Mr. Rodriguez and board, for bearing with that description of what went on. And I think we just have to keep being diligent. It sounds to me like we're doing the very best we can do, and we're staying on top of our game in all the things that were brought forth in this. Thank you.
Does anybody have any?
I do. Mrs. Rhodes, do you think you could give the briefs over so that they can be photocopied?
Oh, absolutely.
And put in our Thursday packet?
Absolutely. Shall I pass them down the row?
Yeah. Or okay. Just pass them to Tony.
Hang on. I've already mixed them up with all the other stuff now.
Thursday packet.
Okay. Here's one, two, three, four. Do y'all want this? It was really good, and I wrote the notes on the school safety, the handout with
definitely.
This. It was good, and it was to the point. You could do this one too, Tony. Okay. I think that would do it. Thank you very much.
Okay. And if you have anything else, just pass it down in. Tony.
I do. Let me tell you one other thing. I know that we like to be proactive. There is a very good go-by here for the time is now to reauthorize the Elementary and Secondary Education Act. It's a nice letter. We fill in our name, send it to our people. John Cornyn would be our person.
How about we do a resolution on the next board meeting?
Absolutely. This is the go-by.
No, it's this is a secondary education, and I think President Obama just talked about it like this past. If we could get it for a resolution on the next agenda as well.
Thank you. Oh, I also met with Beto O'Rourke, but I didn't meet with Beto O'Rourke. He was not there. Met with his chief of staff, and he listened. I took a letter to him. He listened. I don't think he understands our problem. He's from San Francisco, and there was like a logistical problem. He did not really get a grasp of the border or the ideas. They were moving into their office. Everything was a mess. I don't know that it hit home real hard with them. So
we might have to send up follow-up letters if we have not received any information from those.
I would like to recommend that we send a follow-up letter to Congressman O'Rourke, and I also hand-delivered a letter to Arnie
Duncan. Actually,
help me, Arnie Duncan, and he hasn't followed up either. So, yeah, they need to be accountable. They need to know that we care, and they need to care.
She actually personally delivered the letter to Arnie Duncan.
Into his hand.
So he can't say we didn't receive it.
Yeah, he can't say anything. He got it in his hand. He knows we're here.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you brought that information.
Sure. Not just that, in front of the whole delegation, she did it.
You weren't supposed to tell that part.
They know who Canotillo is now, right?
Mm-hmm. They do.
Okay. If there's no other questions for Ms. Searles, then we'll move to the next agenda item.
Item 4 is open forum, and we have one individual signed up to speak, Mr. Joe Williams.
Spectacles on if I can see here. You know,
know, first of all, you guys, you know, I should have got on the agenda there, but I wasn't sure if I was going to even come tonight. Now that I'm retired from teaching, I'm even more busy right now. But I wanted to come tonight. Did everyone, were able to get all the things? I know I've been a pest. I apologize. I emailed you guys, and I gave you, speaking of giving you things like that. I really wanted to tell you thank you. I went to the meeting. I think there was like four of us from the whole district that saw the PROACT people. We saw Robert and Rosa. They were very, very professional, very nice, and they listened. They asked a lot of questions. And Ms. Searles, thank you for calling me and telling me. That way I knew that you guys at least read and I what I had proposed to you guys. And I hope it didn't sound like I was complaining or anything like that. I really love the district here and the community, and I just have some strong feelings that I think are really positive, actually, and you might not hear from anybody else. So I'm not going to go over all that again, but what I wanted to ask you something is kind of a rhetorical question first, and I really wanted you to think about this. We have an opportunity right now when we look for a new superintendent, and the superintendent's not going to fix everything. We know that, okay? But we have an opportunity to change the direction that we're going now. And I think actually have kind of Deal look at themselves and say, you know what, we're not so bad. When we look at all the other districts, we're actually really, really good. And this time to have a different criteria. And I think, I don't know if you guys have any questions about what I had presented to you about some of the, I think I only gave you like six things that I thought. Like, for example, someone with a lot of experience teaching elementary, high school, they don't necessarily have to have a doctorate. Somebody with a lot of common sense. When we do vet them, to not just talk to the other people in the district as far as the assistant superintendents and all that, but actually the people who work under them. Some of the principals could tell you, even some of the teachers and those kind of things. Did y'all have any questions about any of that? Did y'all read those?
It's open forum.
Oh, so you can't say anything at all? Oh, my. Well, I should have got on the agenda there. Well, hopefully, you know, I'd like for you guys to call me. So let me just tell you real briefly here. And I'm going to skip down here to the very bottom. You know, I gave six things I thought we should look for in the superintendent. But I put someone with common sense. Here's what I mean. Someone who does not accept every book or theory or study to come out as the new way that our district has to go. Someone who doesn't look at the El Paso district or the Dallas district or anybody else or some other new theory and say this is the way we need to do it. Someone who will talk to the teachers and not after they've made a decision. And I specifically, I won't say it out loud, but there are some master teachers in your district that you guys probably know them, but you're not aware of them. And my idea is that you should actually get them together, even if they don't want to, be nice to them, and they will help you. You have some teachers in the district who have had perfect scores on the tax test for years and years, and they're right here, and they know more than any group that you're going to get from outside the district, whether they have their doctor or not. They know exactly how to apply what you get outside of the district to right here in Conodia. I am not tooting my own horn, but I did for 10 years. I had one child fail the tax test is all. One child. And there's teachers many times better than me who are still teaching in the district. And this is not rhetorical, but literally I've asked them, has a principal or any from the school board ever asked you how you do it in the classroom? All of them told me no. And every time a new superintendent comes or someone else from outside the district, they're told top down how to do it, but no one ever asks them. I want to give you one specific example because I know the past is the past, but it wasn't just the previous administration. I'll give you a great example here. When I was at Bill Childress, one year we had a superintendent several years ago who was not in love with textbooks and convinced the district that we did not need a fifth grade science textbook. The textbooks were taken away. And I'll confess to you now, because I'm not teaching anymore, I hid mine. I did not okay? The next year in fifth grade, me and one other science teacher who kept our textbooks, we both scored hundreds on the fifth grade science tax. I had 75% who were committed. I had three students who got hundreds. And this other teacher scored higher than me. Then the next year, it was found out that we had kept textbooks, and we were told that we could be written up for disobeying rules, and we kept the textbooks.
There's something wrong with that. And we were also told that science bundles were going to save our district. Please, this is important, okay? I should have got on the agenda, but hopefully you'll give me a little leeway here. We were told the science bundles would save the district and that we needed to just focus on not textbooks, because the latest theories from Dr. So-and-so, I won't name any names, that you guys had from a different district who came in from the El Paso district. The teachers worked diligently for 2 summers on it. The science bundles were never completed. And the only teachers who were ever successful in all the elementary schools were the ones who kind of gave lip service to that, and they did their own thing, and they blew the top off the test. It shouldn't have to be that way. We have a small district with 1 high school, what, 5 elementaries, 2 middle schools. We don't have to have a top-down approach. I taught in the Dallas district, which is like the 8th largest district in the country. I know sometimes necessity forces you to have that kind of, you know, bureaucracy. We don't have to have that here. It should be where you guys on the board say, Mr. So-and-so, you've been teaching for 12 years over at Damian or Bill Childress, and I noticed your tax scores. Man, you do great. The programs that the new administrator wants to bring about, do you think they're good or bad? Tell me the truth. And they'll say, no, this one's good, this one won't work, this one will work. That's the kind of district we need to have. And it's really simple. You know, how many of you guys have heard of Jaime Escalante? Probably everybody here, Stand and Deliver. If you've ever seen the movie, there's one thing, I did a lot of research on this. He made it sound like he saved those children and got them to be able to take the calculus test and the AP test in 1 year. It took him 10 years. 10 years. Okay? He actually started with the children at the elementary and middle school level for year and year and year and worked till he got that way. And that was in East LA. All right? In Caldillo, I think we're better than East LA. All right? Our kids are really, really intelligent, but we need someone who will say, we don't need all the theories, we don't care what Dr. So-and-so says, and I'm working on master's, so I'm not putting down people with their doctorate, but we don't care what the latest theory says. We want to know from the teachers what is working here in the district. And so the last thing I want to tell you, and probably no one's ever told you this before, if we are going to transform Canadillo, number one, it's not going to be a quick fix. That was a red flag to me with the previous administration. When I heard about the priority schools, I had teachers from the other district who called me. They didn't know about any of the other things, but they knew that nothing like that could happen that quick. And see, a teacher could have told you that that's impossible to get kids and schools up from that low level that quickly, because it takes years to get kids caught up. Did you know that this year in my classroom in 4th grade, about half my kids were reading at 1st and 2nd grade level? And these were smart kids, but because I did the dual language, their primary language was Spanish. Now, what do you think I'm going to have if I was going to have them take the test in? In Spanish, of course, because I want them to pass, and so does our principal. But then what's going to happen in 5th grade? Do you think they're going to exit them? They're going to take the test in Spanish again. Then what happens in 6th grade? They have to take it in English. So these same children are going year after year, falling farther and farther behind. And by the time they get to high school, not only are they not passing, but they're so far behind that a lot of them drop out. And these are good kids. So we need to put the kids before the program. There's a lot of changes we need to do, but it needs to start at the elementary school. There's no way that your high school teacher, no matter how good they are, if you have a kid who reads at 5th grade level in English, and he's in your freshman English class, how in the world are you going to get him caught up? There's no way. And how are they going to do well on the ACT and the SAT? There's no way. We need to really focus on the elementary schools and make sure that our kids are doing well all the way through. They're doing enough English, and not to neglect Spanish. My youngest boy was in the dual language, and I had him in there for his 1st grade to learn his Spanish. But still, at a certain point, that's why I put that presentation for you, that we need to make sure that there is no program that's sacrosanct. There's no holy program. We need to look at it and be honest and allow principals and teachers to say, you know what? Yeah, we might be passing the tests, but our kids are falling farther and farther behind, and they shouldn't be afraid to tell you guys the truth. You know, probably a few months ago when I was teaching, I wouldn't have had the guts to come up here and tell you this. But, earlier this year, when I tested my kids in reading, and when I had half the class at 1st grade and 2nd grade level in English, there's no way. You have to be a miracle worker. There's no Jaime Escalante that could catch them up that quickly. So We have to have some type of superintendent who understands this, who won't promise us the moon, and won't try to manipulate population groups, and will be honest and say, you know what, it's going to take several years, we're going to have to focus on the elementary, and we're going to have to get those scores up, find the teachers that do the best and put them in the right place, and then by the time they get to high school, maybe after 5 or 6 years, we'll see some really strong results. Anyhow, I just don't think you're going to find that unless you have some teachers on the committee that you're looking for. You know, I think you need to pick some teachers from the elementary, the middle school, and the high school who can work along with PROACT and whoever else you have and say, hey, these are the questions you really need to ask. That's all I had to say tonight. And I hope you guys, again, didn't sound like I was just complaining, because I really meant it in a positive way.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
I'll take this 2 minutes.
Item 5 is reports and public hearing, the 2011-12 Academic Excellence Indicator System report and public hearing. Mr. Warren.
Can we, you all want to go down there?
No.
Can you all see?
Yeah, actually, I
can. I'm going to go down there. We're going to go down there, sir.
Oh.
Thank you for allowing me to present this evening. Tonight I'll be presenting the 2011-2012 Academic Excellence Indicator System Report. It is important to note that due to the lack of state assessment results for most grades and no accountability information during the transitional year between TACS and STAR, this year's AEIS report will be substantially reduced for 2011 and 2012. Since performance standards have not been determined yet for the grades 2 to grade, no STAR results will be shown, and tax indicators will only be shown for grades 10 and 11. I'll begin with the AIS reporting areas that show the percentage of errors CanyTOISD made in two key data submissions to teams. The first is the person identification database error rate, and the second is the student underreported leavers. The person identification database, or PID, ensures that each time information is collected for a student that the identifying information matches the other data collections for that student. Underreported leavers represent 7th through 12th graders who were enrolled at any time the prior year and who are not accounted for through the district records or TA processing in the current year. There were 17 possible leaver reasons to include graduated, deceased, or dropped out. And our PID error rate has maintained at 0.1 percentage point. The acceptable margin of error is anything under 1%. I just called and confirmed that again today. And we have consistently remained at under 1% for the last 3 to 5 years. It's actually been 5 years. This is a testimony to how well our PEDS department does when they get the data. They process it, and they make sure that we check for any date of birth issues or misspellings of names. The next year when the student's data is in there, if it matches the same, it doesn't result in any sort of PID error. So. The next slide provides an overview of the student population in October 2011 as reported by PEAMS. Some interesting items to note is that our economically disadvantaged population has decreased while the state's has increased, and our LEP population has also decreased slightly from the previous year. Here are CanyTOISD program enrollments for 2011. At 39%, we do have a large number of bilingual ESL students in comparison to the state average of 16%. but we did see a decrease from the previous year. Our K, or career and technology students, are 13 percentage points above the state average of at 35. Our gifted and talented increased by 1 percentage point from the previous year to 7%, and our special education population has maintained or remained at 8%. As I stated at the beginning of the presentation, due to the conversion from tax to STAR, the 2012 AEIS report only reported the results for grades 10 and 11 for the following subjects: ELA, mathematics, science, and social studies, all for grades 10 and 11. ELA were at 90% in comparison to the state's 92%, mathematics at 80 in comparison to the state's 82, science at 79 in comparison to the state's 84%, and social studies were at 96%, matching the state's 96%. I think these numbers are encouraging given that they are at the 80 or 90 percentile mark, with the exception of science, and even then, science is within 1 percentage point. The slide addresses the students who failed the tax, including tax accommodated or tax modified in the prior year, but passed the corresponding assessment in 2012. KNUTI-ISD surpassed the state in both math and reading regionally, and I didn't include the regional numbers here, but I think, God willing, if I present this to you all next year, I'm going to start to include the regional numbers so we get an idea for our district and the region, because I know it's nice to compare it to the state, but then also it's good to see where we're at with the other districts that were here around that surround us. Regionally, we surpassed the surrounding districts by 10 percentage points in the English and matched them in mathematics at 51%. The next slide deals with tax commended performance. This measure refers to the highest performance level on tax as set by the State Board of Education. Students who achieve commended performance have shown a thorough understanding of the knowledge and skills at their grade level. For 2011-2012, this indicator includes performance on tax accommodated and tax M as well. ELA were at 12% in comparison to the state at 23%. Mathematics at 14% in comparison to the state's 25%. Science at 11% for the state's at 22%. Social studies at 39%. Comparison to the state's 51% in social studies, and the all students group at 3%, and where the state's at 10%. Mm-hmm. But please keep in mind that these percentages only reflect grades 10 and 11. Last year, when I reported this to you, that was a culmination of grades 4 through 11. This slide shows the percentages. The next one is exit level tax passing rates. Is that where I'm at here? Okay, good. The slide shows the percent of students who first took the tax exit levels in spring 2011 and eventually passed all tests taken within our district by spring 2012. And this is a great number because it's very, very close to the state average. We're at 91%, where the state's at 93%. Okay, so I'm going to explain this slide because I was asked last year about this.
Mm-hmm.
You're welcome. This report was not compiled by TEA. It was not reported in AEIS, but it is required by state law for districts to compile and include this with our AEIS report to the campuses and to the community. This data is compiled from a report that comes from Mr. Jesus Suarez, who is the prevention specialist here at Canutio. So we have what's considered, or what's written as violent or criminal incidents for KNUTI-ISD, but before I give you those numbers and tell you what they are or read them to you, let me let you know that they represent aggregated items or incidents and not the number of students that happened that signify what an incident is. So the example that I will give you is two incidents could actually be the result of one incident would be one student being caught with alcohol, and another incident would be two students being caught with alcohol, but that would only result in two incidents, not three incidents, one for each child. So at the high school, we had 24 incidents. Middle school, we had 4. For a total of 28, we had 0 at the elementary. These items represent possession of controlled substance, alcohol, tobacco, and then there's the one that is included, that we only had one, that is a felony offense not committed on campus or at a campus function, but involving one of our students. So when that happens, then the law enforcement will contact the high school to let them know, or the campus, wherever it is, that that happened to one of our students. Okay, I wanted to apologize for this horrible looking slide. You guys probably saw it in your packet in December, but I wanted to make sure I included it since it always, since I've always reported it in the past. We didn't have SSI this year, so since we didn't have any SSI to report, I included it just so that it would be like a place marker, so that next year when we pick up again, we'll have that. For 2011-2012 school year, the Student Success Initiative was suspended and no performance information is available to report. This year, students in grades 5 and 8 will have an opportunity to retest, and I should be reporting this to you again next year, but I'm still waiting to see what will be reported once the commissioner decides. That's also why I left draft on it. Next slide deals with annual dropout rates. For the 2011-2012 AEIS report, the annual dropout rate methodology for campuses and districts has changed. Per Texas Education Code Chapter 39, the following are now excluded from campus and district dropout calculations. That is why, let me give you the information here. Students who are not eligible for state funding are excluded now. Students who were court-ordered into a general education development GED program, but who did not earn a GED. Students who have been incarcerated as adults. Students coded as refugees or asylees who have not received adequate schooling outside of the United States. Any students who were previously reported as dropouts to TEA. So if they came from another district but they were reported as a dropout to TEA, they're not going to be included in this count. And students in county detention facilities outside of their home district. So this comparison is not an apples-to-apples comparison for us in the state because our reported district numbers do exclude those aforementioned items, but the state numbers do not. But I still let them side by side like I did last year. Okay, here's another slide that I included that needs some explanation. In years past, graduated, received GED, continued in high school, and or dropped out, were measured without any exclusions, and were reported to you as you see here on this slide. This is how I reported to you for the last 2 years. Now that they've incorporated those exclusions, this year's AEIS report has made changes to fulfill the requirements of statute. So the way that the state measures graduated, received GED, continued high school, and dropped out differs from district and campus and can no longer be compared as we have in the past. This is taken directly from the glossary of items, so I want you to, you guys didn't have to read this. In addition, there are no longer completion rates 1 and 2. They have been replaced with 4 and 5 year graduation rates without exclusions. On the next slide, I will present the completion and student status rates as they are now reported in AEIS. Here's how the AIS report is now displayed. The following percentages on this slide represent the completion rates of students from the 2007 through 2008 cohort. 89% of our students received a diploma on or before August 31st of 2012. 1% completed a general education development certificate by August 31st of 2011. 3% were still enrolled as students in the fall of 2011-2012. And 7% dropped out and did not return by the fall of 2011-2012. These four outcomes, the difference between last year's and Louis reported last year and this year, if you take those four and you add them all in the bottom, you'll get 100% to know where our kids are. It sometimes rounds off a little bit iffy because it's rounded, 99.6 point whatever, but it'll always be at 100%. Next, let's take a look at the completion and student rates. The four-year grad cohort consists of students who first attended ninth grade in 2007-2008. They are followed through their expected graduation with the class of 2011. CanyonTOISD was 1 percentage point above the state in graduation, in completion of the four-year graduation rate. The five-year graduation cohort consists of students who first attended in ninth grade in 2007-2008. They are followed through their expected graduation with the class of 2010. CanyonTOISD was 5 percentage points below the state year. Both of these denominators do not include the newly mandated exclusions. attendance rates reported in AIS are based on student attendance for the entire school year. Only students in grades 1 through 12 are included in the calculation. Our attendance rate is just below the state average and has held steady at 95% for the past 3 years. Historically, attendance rates above 95% were used to represent gold performance acknowledgments, but there are no gold performance GPA gold performance acknowledgments for 2012. We're still going to see what they end up deciding to do. The following indicators are grouped together to help provide a picture of college preparedness at Kennedy ISD and are used by educators to ensure that students are able to perform college-level coursework at institutions of higher education. So all of these I'll be reporting to you in the next few slides. The first is the advanced course dual enrollment indicator. This indicator is based on the count of students who complete and receive credit for at least one advanced course in grades 9 through 12. Kennedy ISD continues to make strides in this area. We are 8 percentage points greater than the state average for 2011, and we are up 9 percentage points from where we were last year. Recommended High School Distinguished Achievement Plan. Kennedy ISD's class of 2011 had an overwhelming number of students satisfying the course requirements for the Texas State Board of Education graduating in Recommended High School Program or Distinguished Achievement Program. We are 13 percentage points over the state reported 80%, but only 1 percentage point over the regional reported number of 92%. Again, there is no longer a gold performance acknowledgement, but if there was, the district would have been eligible since the standard is set at 80%. Some of those items that were used for the gold performance acknowledgements, they will be incorporated into the new system, but we don't know what that's going to be just yet. The next slide deals with advanced placement. This slide refers to the results of College Board Advanced Placement Examinations and the International Baccalaureate Diploma Program examinations taken by Texas public school students. In CanUTO, the percent of students in grades 11 and 12 taking at least one AP or IB examination was 21% in comparison to the state's 24%. The percent of examinees with at least one AP or IB score at or above the criterion score of 3 on an AP or 4 on an IB was 23% in comparison to the state's 49%. College admissions, testing. This candidate had 72% of their graduates either taking the SAT or ACT, and 5.1% of our examinees scored at or above the criterion score on either test. The criterion being 1,110 on the SAT critical reading and math sections combined, or 24 on the ACT composite. Texas Success Initiative. This indicator shows the percent of students who were exempted from taking a test for the Texas Success Initiative because they had a high enough score on their exit level tax test in 2012 and 2011. The qualifying scores are scale scores of 2200 on their tax, mathematics, and ELA with a written composition score of 3 or higher on the writing component. So we're at 45 in ELA in comparison to the state 61, and in math we're at 61 in comparison to the state 73. You know, I'm always trying to put a positive spin on everything, so I'd say that while we're not at the state level in either category, we are close to the 50% mark. At least that's somewhere that we can shoot to grow from there. And, you know, we're at least close to the 50% mark in ELA and over the 50% mark in math. And then these numbers, again, only represent grade 11 for this year. My final slide deals with college readiness graduates for the class of 2011. To be considered college ready as defined by this indicator, a graduate must have met or exceeded the college ready criteria on the tax exit level test, or the SAT test, or the ACT test. Unfortunately, here we've seen a decrease in both subjects from the last year. ELA, we're at 37 in comparison to the state 64, and math at 38 in comparison to the state 67.
The both subjects were at 24, for the states at 52. I open it up to any questions or.
Any questions from the board?
I do have one question.
Ms. Searles?
When will, and I stumble in asking you this, when will the accountability become accountable once again?
Sometime in 2013, Sue Thompson, who is the director of testing and accountability at ESLEDA, is working very closely. She's actually in the component group that represents Region 19, and she's bringing this information slowly. As she brings me information, I will make sure to share that with you in any packet. As soon as I find out, I'll let you guys know. But right now, they're still putting things together. They haven't really determined how they're going to build it yet.
So no target date, really?
I really couldn't give you a date, but I can look into it. I can talk to Sue and see if she has anything. A lot of times
sure,
she'll say, I don't
updated.
Have anything, but I'll let you know, and I'll definitely.
Please, thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Any other questions? Mr. Cornell?
Just down the road, I'd like to see if maybe we can have a presentation, not just about this, but for the last 4 or 5 years, how we've done and where the progression is, a longitudinal presentation about.
Sure. I think we'd be able to do that, but it would end with tax, just to see where we complete with tax, and then we can start to start and then just form the baseline from there. And then if there's any kind of comparison that I could put. They did have the bridge study, but that was for something completely different, just for AYP, which was just reading and math. And I'll give you both, and then hopefully we can, you know, I like that kind of stuff. That's cool.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anybody else? No? Thank you. That'll take us to next. Actually, is this a? It's, yeah.
I think we need.
We're gonna have to open it up to. Okay. Can you invite
yes,
the public?
Yes. At this time, we invite anyone from the public who would like to comment on the AEIS report.
No. Anybody from the community? If not, hearing none, that will take us to the next agenda item.
Item B is the food service program update. Ms. Salson.
Trying to keep the border.
Yeah. Is that what it is? He didn't send me anything.
Thank you.
Send me a text while you're done.
Good evening. My name is Ida Salcedo. I'm the food service director, your new food service director. President Armando Rodriguez, members of the board, Superintendent Ms. Brigham. I'm here to provide an overview of the food nutrition program. The program faced several challenges during the start of the year, but every day, every month, we move forward. We just keep moving forward. For one thing, I got new staff. My new staff is here, my clerical staff, Crystal Rodriguez and Tisha Villalba, which have been a great help. I mean, so much help to me in starting this new program in this new position. During the beginning, I visited all the school sites, and I found that CISD
has a wonderful staff. They're skilled, they're hardworking, and the kitchens are well equipped. They have lots of resources, so that's something that I was very pleased with. And that enables us to provide a good service. I'm a little nervous. This is going to provide a presentation to the board. What is our vision in this program? Our vision is to provide a diversity of healthy menus and nutrition education, complying, of course, with the new standards of the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act. We have a vision to be recognized as an integral part of Canutillo Independent School District's plan for student success. I want to read out all the goals, because I did set up these goals at the very beginning when I came in. I think goals are very important so that I can measure the success of this department. And I want to read them because I want you to feel my commitment to the district. We will support all federal, state, and district policies for healthful school meals for all students as stated by the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act and the Dietary Guidelines of America. We will provide continuing training programs to ensure compliance to all the new standards operating procedures as directed by the Texas Department of Agriculture. We will be a reliable source in contributing to alleviate childhood hunger by offering a variety of programs in the school environment, which is our breakfast program, our lunch program, our after-school snacks program, and summer program. The director and staff will participate in all school-related activities promoting safety and healthful activities. For example, right now I'm participating in the SHAC committee. I know my managers participate in the CADGE. We all participate in the EOP, the Emergency Operation Plan. What else do we have here? Oh, the health fairs, participating with the SHAC program, part of their committee. I went ahead and offered to be part of their health fairs, and that is in progress. We're going to be having them here during the parent-teacher conferences. We will also, it's in progress, but we will also conduct student and parent surveys to provide food and nutrition information of services. And we will strive to increase participation in the breakfast program and the school lunch program, providing a diversity of high-quality, healthy menu options, and that they will all be accepted by the students. We'll strive to have a consistency of high quality and friendly workforce operating a safe environment by providing training as needed. And we'll strive to operate with a predetermined budget and be self-supportive. The program menus and nutrition education will be placed in Canutillo. That's one of my goals, that the menus will be placed in the nutrition education will be placed in the Canutillo website for easy accessibility. Currently, right now, it falls under the department, so you kind of have to go looking for them. But we do have them. We do post them monthly, and we also have my staff member. She provided for you the brochure that we put together at the beginning of the year, and that's posted as well, the guidelines and also information for a la carte sales. So how are we going to do this? Well, first of all, I need your support. I need the board support, the school administrators, I need the principal support, I need parent support, because things are changing. You know, we have new regulations. A new president comes in, regulations change. And sometimes it takes a little time for things to be accepted by everybody. So I need your support. I'm really trying to do the right thing and working really hard at it. The program overview is I'm going to talk about a little bit about the governance, provision two, the new meal patterns, the timelines, and of course we have all the programs that we currently provide in the district. We provided to you on the site a manual that looks like this, and it's more extended information so that the presentation for today was more of a summary. Okay, and of course, if you have any questions or concerns, ask me, and I'll be glad to answer them. Well, it all started with the Richard B. Russell National School Lunch Act. And
This was a way for the government to help the states subsidize for operations and extensions of school lunch programs. And of course, now is it extended to, you know, most current regulation, the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act, which is responsible for all these changes in the meals. How do these programs get administered in food services? Well, first it starts at the federal level by the Food and Nutrition Service, an agency of the U.S. Department of Agriculture, and then at the state level, which is Texas Department of Agriculture, and then locally, which is the school districts, and which is run by my department. These are currently all the food and nutrition programs that we provide at the schools. We have the breakfast program, the lunch program, the after-school program for all those after-school tutoring programs that the schools have. We have the summer program, and this year we were able to bring in not the program, but the free meals. The Saturday Warrior Camp, I applied for reimbursement for those meals to be provided for Saturday, which are called, you know, the weekend meals, and I was approved. So that was a big plus for me with the principals, by the way. And the next program that we have is a la carte sales. La carte sales are so important, and we do very well in Canotillo. To my amazement, when I read the reports, the revenue reports that came in, is that we sell a lot of food to adults. And that's good because it supplements revenue for our program. And not only that, as you know, with Provision 2, we have the free, reduced, and paid meals. And those paid meals have to be paid from another account that are not federal. And this, the la carte sales covers that cost. And like I said, we do very well in the department. So what is the significance of all these new rules? The significance is serving nutritious meals and changing eating habits. Changing eating habits. Why? Well, school meals impact 32 million children every day, and we're trying to combat the epidemic of childhood obesity as well as the urgent problem of childhood hunger. Nearly 1 in 3 children are at risk of preventable diseases like diabetes and heart disease. For many of these children, a school meal is the only nutritious source of food that they can count on. And additionally, during 2010 years, 17 million households in the United States representing 32 million adults and over 60 million children struggle to put enough food on the table. And we know with going through this economic crisis that we are a huge source for those children. Key changes. In summary, the message here is we first started this year with the National School Lunch Program. The regulations primarily hit lunch, and the key changes are offering larger portions of vegetables and fruits. The message is make half of the plate fruits and vegetables. That's the message. Make half of the plate fruits and vegetables. This new regulation forces menus to be balanced, low fat, low calories, and a balance of nutrients from all the vegetable and fruits and grains required. That's really the bottom line. It forces us to have a balance within all those nutrients, the way it's set up. For the lunch program this year, we're just offering more vegetables. In the past, the vegetables and the fruit were one component. This year, they have separated them into two components. So we have a portion size for vegetables and a portion size that we must offer for fruits. Did I say fruit? Fruits and vegetables. And the kids must choose at least half a cup of either a fruit or a vegetable or a combination of both. Okay? And the school breakfast program, thank God for that they only implemented one thing, which was the that we can only offer fat-free and 1%. This is not a very good chart, but in your book, you'll have all the charts, all the timelines, and all the requirements for your review. And basically what this is telling you is just giving you a comparison from last year to this year.
Last year, like I just mentioned earlier, the fruit and vegetable components were one component. This year, they're separate. Second, there was no specifications of vegetables, meaning that a vegetable equals a vegetable. Now we have vegetable subgroups. And the reason for that, and in all the reading that I've done, is because, again, they wanted us to reach all the nutrients for all the vegetables that they have to provide in all the colored subgroups. I call them colored because they have the dark green vegetable subgroup, the red and orange, the beans, and the starchy, and then you have all the others that are, you know, more limited in their nutrients, but they still contribute to the vegetable subgroups. This year, even though it wasn't required for breakfast to, except for the milk, the regulation, there was no, we still followed the same requirements as last year. What I did is I went ahead and analyzed those menus, looking forward, being proactive, looking forward to next year to see how I was going to purchase food for next year, how I was going to put menus together for next year. I didn't follow everything, but it just, you know, I just started doing the groundwork for it. One of the things that we have this year that we didn't have in the last years was that we have dietary specifications. We have now to count calorie averages throughout the week. We have a saturated fat that we have to count, and we have sodium that we have to count, and of course the trans fat. The government has allowed us for phases into this regulations, but like I said, I was proactive. If I had to read every label of every food product, I was going to go ahead and start looking at those food items to see if they were going to be eligible for the next years. As you see, you will see the chart for the calories for K through 5. They've divided the grade groups into three areas. K through 5, 6 to 8, and 9 through 12. All of them have their requirements. K through 8 kind of overlap in the requirements, and what I found is that you can actually create one menu for K through 8 versus creating a menu for K through 5 and 1 through 6 through 8. It's just the way the you know, when you combine the foods, and I played around a lot with the food to understand this, and that's what I currently have. I have a menu for K through 8 and 9 through 12. These menus have daily and weekly requirements that we must adhere to, like I said before, and of course I mentioned the milk. And this is the vegetable subgroup categories, like I was talking to you. Before it was vegetable equals a vegetable. Now they don't equal like that. You have to you have requirements for each vegetable group by week, so we cannot just serve vegetables like we normally used to. I have highlighted the ones we use. There's some cultural items that we use, and then some that we don't. And I would like to explore others, but at this point, you know, that's currently what we're using in our menus. Menu analysis. Like I said, everything's changing. Menu analysis. What I had to do was actually conduct spreadsheets with all those requirements, all those dietary specifications, all those calorie inputs, all those factors that they're requiring me to have or requiring the school district to have. And I put them all into a spreadsheet and counted everything so it could balance throughout the week. And as I listened to the principals and I listened to the managers and the workers and the parents that would call me in, as I listened to them and moving forward and learning more and more and more how we can balance all this specifications, we were able to create a cycle menu. And the cycle menu really is a foundation to this whole new regulation, because now with having a cycle menu, and I provided those cycle menus to you, it's just the foundations for everything we do. It's about having the menus readily available to us. The warehouse management can work with them. Cafeteria managers, they're no more guessing what's going on. Purchasing, preparing consistency, record keeping, calculating food costs, production worksheets, monthly substitutions that can be analyzed. And then for administration, teachers, parents, students, you know, there's a lot of factors into all this that that get affected. And one of the big ones also that I addressed was the school nurses. They wanted to know what our menus are going to look like. What's the carb, you know, how many carbs in each menu? So with the cycle menus, it will always be there consistently. The only thing we have to do now is get creative. You know, for the future is plugging in other items into similar items that will not compromise all those regulations, okay? All those dietary specifications that we need to adhere to.
You mentioned right now that you have received information from parents and teachers and staff. Have you considered getting information from students? You say on the primary.
Right. I have not had the opportunity to talk or conduct surveys. That's in progress. What we're doing right now is putting surveys together and being part of the SHAC committee. What the committee members, which include PE teachers, nurses, parents, what they told me is that they're going to help me conduct those surveys. Okay? Because as you recall, I started here August 15 and August 27 school started. So everything started happening too fast for me. And in addition to all that, the challenge I had, I didn't have staff. I didn't have staff available to me to help me through the process. So it's been challenging.
Clerical staff. Because you had cafeteria staff.
Right, mm-hmm. Right. But remember that the focus was the regulation. The focus was how are we going to put menus together following regulations, okay? So that was what the focus was. I mean, and then, of course, other operational situations came aboard, and we addressed them as they came in. But currently, that's what's happening is we're putting, being part of that committee to build relationships with the teachers, with the parents, and there are some students in that area, and we've talked to them. And then when I visit the school sites, I go into the cafeteria area, and I talk to the students, and I get, you know, not written form information, but, you know, verbal, in a verbal form, what they're thinking about the menu. Okay? So all this leads to a reimbursable meal. Why is reimbursable meal so important? Because that's the way our program gets funded. We have to be able to comply with all the regulations and serve a reimbursable meal because that's how we would get funded and we move forward. Identifying the components of a reimbursable meal also reinforces nutrition education messages that emphasizes selecting healthy choices of a balanced meal. So identifying the components, and what we did with the help of the public office at the beginning of the year is we made huge posters for the beginning of the line with all the components so that it was easily read by the students when they came into the line. Personal training, so how do I do this? You know, all these new regulations, I'm new staff to me, of course, you know, not to the school, but to me, they're new. How do I do that? Well, first I started with the in-service. And then we have monthly manager meetings. Every month, and we look at the menus, what's working, what's not working. What they come to me and tell me what the kids are telling them. The principals have come to me and told me what is not working, what is working. And then, of course, we have the central office support that I continually train them so that they can provide information to them. We have email communication. We're always open to questions and answers to exchange information. And, of course, the school site visits, and we have the end drive. In the end drive, we place all the material in the end drive so it's easily accessible for the worker so they can get to the information readily. Okay? So that's what we have. Compliance. Compliance is in all our areas of operation. I've talked to you about the meal patterns and how we have to comply, but we also have procurement compliance, record keeping and reporting, point of service, because we are provision two, we have to make sure that our meals are counted accurately, okay? So what happens if we're not in compliance? Well, the state can take physical action against us, you know, which means removing the funds. I hope that never happens to us. And currently, you know, as an incentive for us to, for the school district's food services department, what the government did was, as an incentive, was to provide a 6 cents per lunch reimbursement to follow the menus, to follow these new regulations. And it was in form of submitting the worksheets, the menus, to the state and then for their review. Provision 2. Currently, you know, and I think most of you know what Provision 2 is. Provision 2 is a program that we currently operate under, which reduces all the burdens of the applications and county meals. It's just so much easier, not only for this department, but for the parents, the schools. You know, it's just so much easier to work under this department. Of course, there's certain criteria that we must meet, and we have been Provision 2 since 1992 and 93. That was a base year. Currently, the renewal, for us to get a renewal will be in spring of 2014. I am actively reading on Provision 2 and what we need to do to continue with this program. Okay, so what is a successful program? What is a successful school nutrition program? I need your support. I need administrative support. I need to serve a diversity of quality and healthy foods. I need to be in compliance. I need to train and have competent employees. We need to provide excellent customer service, friendly and welcoming. We need nutrition education. We need student acceptance. So overall, we need a lot of things to be successful. And I'm here and I sit here before you to tell you that I was, all the challenges that I faced, I worked hard, diligently, and I submitted the menus that I analyzed diligently and worked with and working with the staff, because I didn't do it alone. I mean, the staff had to help me. I'm new to Canutillo. The staff had to help me, my managers. When I talked to the bakers, when I talked to the cooks, what is going on at the schools, they helped me develop these menus to where they are now. If you look at the menus, they evolved. They evolved from where they were at the beginning in August to where they are now. And I submitted them, and the state has certified this district as being in compliance. So we are going to get the 6 cents certification. I'm proud to tell the board that it did pay off, all the hard work. And in addition, I would like to say that I'm here to tell you that I appreciate all your support, Ms. Brigham. I know Ms. Brigham has been very supportive. A lot of the departments, the finance department has been very supportive of giving me reports, the public office by laminating posters for me so I could put out the information, HR for providing me just guidelines on how to do things. I've been very fortunate to come into a district where there's a lot of customer service and customer service within our departments. Thank you. And do you have any questions for me at this time?
Thank you. I know we got this information, and that's a lot of information. And so what I would request as well after there's questions, but to have a follow-up at the Facilities and Finance Committee. And but that way we could, if there is any more questions that arise, because I know there's a lot of more standards and accountability when it comes to that. And so I'll open this up for any questions at this point. Mr. Cornell?
I don't have any questions. I just have, I know you're getting on board with, this is your first year. I think what the board has been trying to do, and we've had surveys over the last few years of the students about the food service program, and we've noticed that there's still issues there. Obviously, you know, this is your first year here. And what I think the board has instructed administration already to do is that we want an extended survey of our students with respect to this, especially now that there's new regulations. But I think the board, and probably we ought to, like Mr. Rodriguez said, set this up for maybe more of a workshop just for the food service issue. Because what I foresee is that what the board wants to do is really go above and beyond what regulations are provided. We want to make sure that not only we are in compliance, but that we're actually listening to our kids. And we saw the results of the surveys for the first time. We had surveys done of our students in all aspects of what the district does. And for the last few years, there have been a few items that have still recurred from our students, and those have been the food service program and bullying. And even though we've implemented a bullying program in the district, you know, it's gotten better, but we still see issues there. And so what we want to do is, I think the board has a vision to really, go above and beyond. And I think you're going to find that this board is going to support what you're trying to do, but we want something that goes above and beyond what the state and the feds are asking us to do. Part of the other things that I think the board would like to see is really an overall plan of how we're going to accomplish that at first. And for that, I think maybe a workshop would be great so that you can get input from the board as to what we feel is important. One of the things that I think we need to really focus on is including more of the local and fresh produce from the area. I mean, obviously that takes planning, that takes issues with procurement, that takes issues with funding, but we need to start somewhere and assess what it is we want. How can we implement part of this overall plan that we'd like to see? Other districts in the country are doing it, and I think this board is very resolute about making sure that we have a higher vision for our food service program and nutrition as well. So you'll find that the board is going to be very supportive of putting effort in and resources into the department to make sure that we accomplish that. So, but we need to have a plan. There's a lot of information here. I think Mr. Rodriguez is right. But I think we have to do it in terms of a workshop where we don't have a lot of other items on our facilities and finance, because this is something we really need to focus on. So, and if you'll work together with Ms. Brigham, I think Ms. Brigham knows what the board's feeling is about having surveys done this year of our students. We actually requested from last year, after the review of last year's surveys, that the administration expand on both on some of those items, but particularly the food service and the bullying issues, that those be expanded. I think there was only a few questions dedicated to that last time. I think the board wants to see something a little more aggressive in terms of the question, the surveys. Okay. So, but good presentation. Thank you for your service and your work.
Thank you, sir.
And we look forward to meeting with you in a workshop.
I do too. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Ms. Searles?
I have a few questions for you. Number one, are we peanut free?
Yes, we are.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Yes, I'm glad to hear that. And I would like to echo Mr. Coronado. We live in the most beautiful agricultural valley available. And there are USDA programs that support local produce and fresh food. And
we have one in place. It's called Farm to School.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. It's called Farm to School, and we are allowed a certain amount of funding for us to purchase foods through that Farm to School, through that commodity.
I think that we would like to see that to the forefront, and that it's showcased also to students that, hey, they screw this, down the road somewhere. It didn't come from a faraway country. It's something we can be proud of. So I would really like to see that emphasized. And also, I have a granddaughter at Garcia Elementary. She thinks the food is the best. She loves it.
I mean,
yeah, she thinks it's just awesome and loves to tell me about her lunch. So I, and the tacos are her very favorite. So I thought I should pass that along to you.
I'm still waiting for the cupcakes from them.
And, you know, I was kind of sad to see that the good old Canyatillo favorite pizza and corn day obviously was not included anymore.
Hey, those were good.
Those were the good old days.
What was that again?
Pizza and corn day. It was always, I raised three children here. It was their favorite day of the week, and I saw no more pizza and corn anymore. Guess it's not too healthy. Thank you very much. Thank you for a great presentation.
Thank you.
Does anybody else have any questions? No? Hearing none, if you could take this to the next agenda item.
Thank you.
Item 6 is a consent agenda, and the administration recommends approval as presented.
Do we have anything that we want to pull before we approve it? No? I do. I would like to pull the extension of membership with cooperative contracts. So, does anybody else have anything else?
I do. I just, under H, and all this is for is clarification, update 95, we had left out part of that.
The second reading? You're yep. talking about, okay.
We left, want? I just want to make sure it's still left out in the second reading.
Yes, that is EIE local, right?
Exactly. Okay, thank you very much.
So we don't
much.
Need to pull it out?
No.
No. Anything else?
Thank you.
Okay, Ms. Gonzalez?
Hold on a second. Ms. Carrasco, which is the one that we updated? It has to do with I think it's that's the one we updated?
Ask me again.
The one we just updated, rate revisions to these, the local compensation and benefits, leaves and absence?
Yes.
Can you just, I want to pull down so you can just give us an update.
Okay.
That's one I want to do.
Did you want to pull that item?
Yes.
Okay. And then, so that's item again?
G.
G. Is there anything else? No? Hearing none, can I get a motion to approve the consent agenda with the exception of item G and P?
I'll second that.
I have a motion and a second. If there's no further discussion, Tony, can we pull the board?
Mr. Coronado?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Strauss?
Yes.
Okay.
That would take us to item P, is extension of membership with cooperative contracts. Mr. Gatton?
Actually, item G was first.
Oh. Or, Ms. Carrasco, can you just give us a brief update on that one, just a summary?
Basically, on that DEC local, what we discussed in our personnel committee meeting was that we wanted to go ahead and have a two-hour increment for professional employees. I believe in the past we could only call in, exempt employees could only call in their absence on full day or half day increments. And now basically what we've done is that for positions for which a substitute is normally required, it will still be recorded in half day and full day increments because of the substitute. But for positions which the substitute is not required, then exempt employees shall be able to record their leave in two-hour increments. And basically that was the major change in that, because the system now allows the time to be recorded in hourly increments. So we've done that. And we went ahead and added a sentence there that says that an exempt employee may be excused from duty by the principal or immediate supervisor for an hour for emergency or temporary illness. But anything above that would have to be called into the system. And so that's that was the change to DEC. Let me see, I believe. And then we just made some other changes in the policy under the section of page 4 of 8, which is the limitations of requests for leave. And the district, as a standard for the last couple few years, has not allowed discretionary leave before Christmas break. I just went ahead and changed it to winter break, Thanksgiving break, and spring break. Those were the three holidays that are not allowed the day before the day after for discretionary leave. Went ahead and included two more, and that was when there's professional or staff development days, then they must be present, and also on the first and last day of instruction. That's also a requirement of for non-discretionary leave on those days also. Under excessive absences, did add one sentence, and that sentence is use of personal business leave shall not exceed 5 consecutive work days per semester, or 10 work days maximum per school year. So this is just putting a cap on our personal business leave. And those were all the changes to DEC law. Any questions?
No questions?
Okay. Thank you for
the clarification. Was that, does that clarify? Okay, can I get a motion to approve it?
Motion
then?
To approve.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
I have a motion and a second if there's no discussion.
Mr. Cornell?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Strauss?
Yes.
Thank you, Board.
Okay, that will take us to the next item. And the question I have on the extension of memberships with cooperatives, the backup data that I saw was just, was it one page?
Actually, it's just the board agenda item. That's all I have on
that. Okay, and so what backup information do we have regarding?
The only backup we have on this, President Rodriguez, is the fact that last year we had a finding from our external auditor that we had purchased some items from the Houston-Galveston Area Council, and they asked us for proof that the board had approved entering into the cooperative contract, which we didn't have because it was so old. We entered into it so long ago that we didn't have anything on record. So that's why I brought it to the attention of the board last year. I want to do that every year to make sure that we're in compliance with our external auditors. That's the only reason we're bringing it to you this evening.
Was this that? I'm thinking, was it that finding that it's been like 20 years old?
Yes, sir. That's
okay.
Correct.
And I guess my question just with the cooperatives, and I guess we'll need to look at it, is the policy, but that's a different agenda item. So I guess that clarifies that for right now. Does anybody else have any questions? No? Okay, then I'll make a motion can I get a motion?
Also,
do I have a second?
I'll second.
I have a motion and a second to approve the agenda item. If hearing no discussion, Tony?
Mr.
Cardone?
Yes.
Mrs. Gonzalez?
Yes.
Mr. Medina?
Yes.
Mrs. Mendoza?
Yes.
Mrs. Quintana?
Yes.
Mr. Rodriguez?
Yes.
Mrs. Strauss?
Yes.
That will take us to the next item.
Item 7 is executive session, and the time is now 8:16 p.m. The meeting is to be closed under Texas Government Code Sections 551-071, 072, and 074 for discussion of personnel matters regarding possible recommendations for non-renewal of the term contracts for certain employees and possible staff reassignments, to receive advice from legal counsel regarding personnel issues and internal audit assigned audit tasks and status, and for discussion regarding possible acquisition of real property.